What I would like people to take away from my story is that not to feel bad for me, but to be excited about the fact that I've been able to live such a full life and continue to have all the same highs and lows that so many people have. And I do it from my wheelchair, and that's okay.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Few people have turned adversity into opportunity as dramatically as Kelly Brush. Brush was on the Middlebury College ski team when she was paralyzed in a ski racing accident in 2006. 20 years later, Brush is a leader of a national movement to empower people with spinal cord injuries. Brush, who recently turned 40, is the founder and spokesperson for the Kelly Brush Foundation, which provides grants for people with spinal cord injuries to buy adaptive sports equipment and maintain an active lifestyle. Its best-known fundraiser is the annual Kelly Brush Ride, which draws nearly 1,000 bike riders and will take place this year on September 12th in Middlebury. There are also Kelly Brush Rides in Park City, Utah, and the Bay Area. Kelly Brush is the mother of two young daughters and worked for 10 years as a pediatric nurse practitioner. She spoke to me this week from her home in Charlotte. Kelly Brush, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't we just start right where we are now in August 2026? I know you just recently came out of major back surgery that was kind of a revision to the surgery you had 20 years ago after your ski accident. So just tell us what you just have been through and how you're feeling.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a spinal cord injury 20 years ago where I broke my back and they put rods and screws in my back to stabilize my spine. I then got scoliosis after that, which led to a surgery last year that was scheduled and planned, and I needed to have surgery to fix that. And then basically there were some complications that came from it, and that sort of all came up this summer. And I found out I needed to have another back surgery, which was a really unfortunate, it was a bummer to hear for sure, especially in the middle of the summer. And so I'm just about 5 weeks post-op now and starting to feel better, especially over the last week or so, feeling a lot more myself and able to, do all the things that I normally do with the, restrictions that I'm not allowed to bend and lift and twist and all the, mountain bike and all the things yet. But I'm grateful to have gotten the surgery. It was a big surgery. It was going back into my back and replacing the hardware that was in there, taking out the old rods and screws, putting new ones in that are longer. And hopefully now we're done with back surgeries for a long time.
Did this kind of bring you back to the beginnings of this whole journey you've been on? And was that something challenging?
Yeah, a lot of the things, so like I said, I had had a back surgery last year, and I was surprised at how much it sort of threw me into a lot of the same stuff that I had after my original injury, which was things like nausea and lightheadedness and not being able to sit up for long periods because I would get lightheaded. And so I got some of that stuff right after my surgery last year, which surprised me and didn't last nearly as long as it did after my original injury. So I kind of knew that was going to happen again this year and was prepared for it, but it's not fun, to have to go through that and to deal with it and do it for a second summer in a row. The only benefit was that I sort of knew, some idea of what to expect, even though last year's surgery wasn't nearly as, big as this one in some ways. So, yeah, it brought me back for sure a little bit. And especially, this year is the 20th anniversary of my accident. I just had that in February. So we've been sort of talking about it and celebrating it over the last year. And so now to have all of this come up again is kind of ironic.
For people who don't know your story, maybe you could just share the basics of it.
Yeah. So I grew up in Vermont. I was a big athlete. All through my childhood, ski racing became my main sport, and I attended the Green Mountain Valley School in Waitsfield, and spent for high school, which is all focused around ski racing. Was racing nationally and internationally, and then raced for Middlebury, which is a Division I ski racing program. So I was skiing at a really high level. My sophomore year, I ended up during one of the races for Middlebury, I fell and got sort of thrown off the side of the trail and hit a lift tower and broke my back. And I have a spinal cord injury, so I use a wheelchair full time. And since then, that was 20 years ago, and I've been able to do a ton of things since then in really cool and positive ways. And some of them are just living my life. You know, I graduated college on time. I went to grad school. I worked for 10 years as a nurse practitioner. I had two kids. You know, I lived in Boston and the Maine, and I'm back in Vermont now. I've been here for 10 years now. So I've done, you know, I've had a really full life. I love to be active and do sports and, you know, do so many of the Vermont things that I've always loved to do. You know, like hike and get on the water and all that sort of stuff. But I've also been able to, I started a foundation called the Kelly Brush Foundation, and we help other people with spinal cord injuries get out and be active. And I've been able to do a ton of work in that, and we work all over the country, and that's what I spend my working life doing now, and it's great, and I love that, and it's, you know, a really cool part of, you know, what came out of a really unfortunate accident.
For people who are faced with any sort of life-changing circumstance, there's really kind of a crossroads where they could be overwhelmed by despair, by the magnitude of the changes they have to face, or another path, which you clearly took. I'm curious what enabled you to take this path towards just focused on your healing, recovery, positivity, and how might others learn from that?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple different things that I think set me up really well for success with this, because I do feel like I've, you know, life was pretty successful for me, you know, after facing this. And one of them is that I had a really incredible support network, and so I had family that was incredible. I had a lot of friends. I had people sort of coming out of the woodwork to support me, and that's, you know, that was the Vermont community because I grew up here. It was the Middlebury community where I was in school. It was the ski racing community where I had gotten hurt, and I just had a ton of support, and so that really helped. I often talk to people about being that support for other people. You never know when you can be that support for somebody, but when you can, stepping up is really important, because it can make such a difference. So that was one thing. I think the other was that. And I don't think I thought of this in such terms at the time, but like reflecting on it is really that you always have a choice. I was actually just talking to a group of young girl soccer players last week. This was and I was talking to them about this exact thing, and it was about whenever something happens in life, you have a choice, and you have a choice on how you respond. And that's with big things, and that's with little things. And I think I just made the choice that I wanted to be who I was. And at each step in the way to get there, I needed to do certain things, right? And so when I first got hurt, it was like, I just want to be back and be a regular college student again. That was like all I wanted. And I wanted to, like, I just don't want my life to change because of this. I still want to do and have all these dreams that I've always had. And so the choices along the way was like, okay, if I want to do that, I need to figure out how to get in and out of my wheelchair. So that's my first choice. And so I'm either going to work hard at that or I'm not going to work hard at it. And so I'm going to work hard at that. And I think it all, you know, obviously my thing was really big, but with anything that comes up, you have a choice with how you respond and how you react. And that's been the thing that I think has been most helpful for me in my life. And even when there's things that are really hard or really sad, you feel that, and then you make the choice to think about the thing that is going to move you forward in a good direction.
For most people, the transition to life using a wheelchair and some of the physical challenges that one faces with a spinal cord injury, it would be accomplishment enough to just make that transition smoothly. They wouldn't necessarily think of starting a foundation, as part of their recovery. What was the void that you wanted to fill, that you saw in 2006 or your family saw that motivated you to create the Kelly Brush Foundation?
Yeah, I really think it was two big things. I mean, I talked just a minute ago about the network that I had of support. And in a lot of ways, having that support was so incredible. I mean, thankfully, my family took lots of pictures. So there's like pictures in my hotel or my hospital room that's like filled with, stuffed animals and cards and all this stuff. And so in that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, we need to harness this support and do something good with it. So because I had so much of that, I really felt like there's something good that we can do here. And then there was really two clear things that I saw. The first was that my accident really shouldn't have happened. And that became clear really quickly in that the lift tower that I hit should have been protected by safety fencing and different safety measures that just weren't there the day that I got hurt. And so that was sort of the like first most glaring thing that we wanted to address. And that was around safety and ski racing. It's a smaller part of what we do now because we've done so much in that world. It's a small little world. But it's still a big part of who we are. And so safety and ski racing was sort of one of the first things that we thought about after I got hurt, of like, this shouldn't have happened to me, and I really don't want it to happen to anybody else. Some of my, all my best friends were ski racing with me. And I didn't want any of them to get hurt like I did. So that was the first thing. And then as we thought about that, it was like, okay, well, let's address safety and ski racing, but like, what can we do to support the community that I've now joined? And for me, it became really obvious how important adaptive sports were to me. Sports generally were so important, being out, being active. Being a Vermont kid who would go and, climb trees and catch frogs and play on all the teams at school, that was still what I wanted to do. And so learning I could do sports and actually trying adaptive sports for the first time, getting on a hand cycle after my accident really made me feel like myself again. And I saw a lot of barriers for people getting into adaptive sports.
Like what?
So some of the barriers to getting into adaptive sports, I mean, first of all, one of them is financial, right? So to get any kind of equipment is hugely expensive. It's really specialized equipment, and it's really hard to afford, especially for people who are already living with a higher cost of living. So something like a mountain bike is $20,000 just for your basic mountain bike. To get a mono ski to go skiing, you're looking anywhere from like $7,000 to $9,000. That's on top of the skis that you need to actually ski on. For an entry-level hand cycle, like the same thing that you could get, a $100 bike at Walmart or Target, you're looking at least $2,500 or $3,000 for a bike like that. So the financial barrier is a huge one. Another is just the belief that it's possible. So many people don't know about adaptive sports. Or if they do hear about it, they're like, no way I can do that. There's no way my body works well and that I can actually make that work. I'm not, all the barriers. I don't have a car to drive me to the place to try it, so I'm never going to be able to do that. I don't think that, I'm going to have fun doing that. That's going to feel so different. I'm not going to like it. There's just lots of sort of the psychological and mental blocks that come with sort of an understanding and a belief that you can actually do this and be part of it. And that was not, I didn't have that. That wasn't the case for me. I just so badly wanted to get into sports, but I see that all the time. And we know that that's the case for so many people with disabilities and barriers to getting into adaptive sports. And we know that once those barriers are broken down and they're able to get into it, there's so much that grows. And there's so much positive that comes from being able to be in adaptive sports. That's beyond just the physical part of it. So that was a big part of, we saw, I mean, I didn't see all of that, and I probably couldn't have articulated it all exactly like that 20 years ago. But that was kind of the basic idea of what I saw and why we wanted to then support this for this new community that I had joined. And it was me, but it was also my family. I will say that starting the KBF was, my family was a huge part of that too.
What was the state of adaptive sports when you first entered that world 20 years ago, and what have you seen change in the 2 decades since?
That's a great question. I mean, one of the things that I've seen change a lot is the technology of the actual equipment. which is really cool. So a lot of adaptive sports, for better or worse, have been developed, by somebody who had a passion project for it. So one of them, one of the first mountain bike makers was a guy who also had a spinal cord injury, and all of his buddies were out biking, and he was like, I want to do that too. So he just started like welding stuff together and making bikes in his garage. And he's still one of the biggest providers of adaptive mountain bikes. And they're great bikes, but he has really honed in the design of them and how they function. And the technology has grown exponentially. Another one is one of the most sought after monoskis was developed by a guy who was an engineer, and he took on this project with a student who was like, hey, I want to work on this ski. And this guy ended up making a whole career out of it. He left. He's not a professor anymore. He does this all the time. And the technology has just taken off hugely. And that's made it more comfortable to ski in them. It's made it safer. It's made it more fun. So you really see the growth of equipment, which is great. One of the things that I think we at the Kelly Brush Foundation have made a big difference in, and there's some other organizations that have also, but is really building community around adaptive sports. And I know when I got hurt, I didn't know anybody else with a spinal cord injury. And so I did some sports, but I did them all with my able-bodied friends and family. And now when someone gets hurt, it's so nice. Certainly doesn't happen to everybody, but we're working to get more and more people to get them looped in with the adaptive community, because there's something really different about being able to build community with people who are doing things similarly to you. Both with being able to ask questions and see what they're doing, as well as just the ability to sort of feel seen and be seen by other people who are living a similar life to you outside of adaptive sports, right? Who are dealing with the same issues and challenges that you are in regular life.
Right. I met you when we were both attended a screening of the film Best Day Ever about the first adaptive mountain bike trail network in the country, apparently, which is located in Bolton or Richmond. I'm not sure. I think it straddles the line. One of the things that I heard in that movie, it featured a young woman named Ali Bianchi, who suffered a spinal cord injury in a 2022 mountain bike accident. One of the things she said was that when she was in the hospital or shortly after her accident, you reached out to her and kind of reassured her and talked to her. And, this was in a movie, so we knew about it, but I imagine this is something you do that we don't hear about. Is that something you do a lot? You hear about somebody who's had an accident and you just reach out to them?
Yeah, it's something that I do all the time, and I would say it's not at all like part of what it's not like a program, using air quotes for that we do at the Kelly Brush Foundation. It's just sort of something I do, and it's, I think of it as sort of like a mentorship, right? And in that moment, it's so scary. Life all of a sudden feels so overwhelming, both for the person who's injured, but also their family. And there's so many questions and so many unknowns. And being able to have somebody who's been there and gone through it. And in a lot of ways, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, that like I can tell them all these things, but almost the biggest value that I have is just showing up as myself. And having people see and watch me like move through the world and know that there I am in my wheelchair, rolling into the hospital. I just drove myself there after dropping my kids off, at school or whatever, and got my chair in and out of my car by myself. And I'm doing all this, right? And like just the fact that they see that is so helpful. And so I love doing it. I love being able to talk to people who are newly injured. I mean, I obviously sports and being active is sort of what the Kelly Brush Foundation is all about, and that's my personality too. So I often talk to people about that stuff. But even when that's not something that they're interested in, being able to have somebody who they can see is living a fulfilling life, with a spinal cord injury is so helpful. And so I love to do that, and I'm happy to. And I just happened to run into a guy at a restaurant on Lake Champlain, like a week ago, and started chatting with him. And he had been injured for 6 months, and so he had so many questions and was brand new. And he was with a bunch of friends there, but they were all able-bodied. They can't answer the questions about catheters and wheelchairs and stuff. And so, we exchanged numbers, and now we can text about things like that. So it's definitely something that I really enjoy doing, and I think can be really helpful, and I'm glad to be able to, give back to the community that way.
Do you remember what you told Allie? I mean, her world had been completely turned upside down. I remember in the movie she said her biggest fear was that she wouldn't be able to have kids, and that was something she asked you about. Just if could you share what you said to her in the immediate aftermath of her accident?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously I don't remember exactly, but I actually have like vivid memories of talking to her, but my takeaway from her was I left the conversation going, she's gonna be just fine, because her attitude was so good in the moment. But my message to her in that was, one was about kids, because I knew that she had, I think somebody had told me that that was a question she had. And then we certainly talked about it. And I told her my experience with kids, which was, I had both of my kids after my accident. Everything, I mean, yeah, it's a little more high risk, but everything went totally fine. And it's fabulous. And I love being a mom. And so being able to tell her my experience, I think, was really helpful. But my other big message to her is, like, things are going to be different. And that's okay. And you can still do so many things, but they might just look a little bit different. And that's often my biggest message to people. And being able to embrace the doing this different, same sort of thing, but a little bit differently, I think really sets people up for success. And Allie, I think, has done really, really well with that, and it's been great to, stay in touch with her. She's a good friend of mine, and I'm grateful that I got connected with her, because she's so wonderful. But yeah, that's my message usually, is that life is going to look a little bit different, but embracing that different and being okay with knowing that a lot you can still do so many things, even if you're doing things a little bit differently.
One of the things that struck me in seeing that wonderful film, which was the subject of a previous Vermont conversation, Allie was a guest here as well, was, and then seeing you in the audience, was that you had an accident that helped launch a movement. What do you make of that?
I mean, it's really wild. Well, I'll say this. It's very cool and really amazing. It's not something I think about very often, like, it's not, that's not, I'm not putting my energy into that, right? And I don't think about all of the difference I've made. I will say, when I had, the actual anniversary of my accident was in February of this year, 20 years. And, we did like a couple posts on social media and things like that through my foundation and stuff. And I got so much love through that, and so many people reaching out about the impact that I made on them. And it was really humbling, and it was really cool to hear that. And I love that. I mean, I think it's really amazing, and I think we've made a really big difference. I think what I've been able to start and put into motion, I mean, there's so many people behind what we do that I at all can't take all the credit, but Greg Durso, who's the other subject of the film Best Day Ever, is also a really good friend of mine. He works at the Kelly Brush Foundation. He runs all our programs there, and he got a couple of grants from us. And he and I are such amazing partners, and we love the work that we do. But he is so kindly says things like, I couldn't do this without you. You're the one, you started this. And that's such a, I mean, I love that. I'm so glad that I'm able to do that, and support, him and thousands of other people that I don't even know. and their family and create things that are just that feel a little bit better and know that life is okay and can be better. And yeah, I mean, it's again, I don't spend my energy or time thinking about it, but it's cool. It's really cool to acknowledge it.
You gave a TED talk a few years back in which you talked about your ambivalence about being called an inspiration. Why are you ambivalent about that?
The word inspiration can get thrown around a lot, and I think it has really incredible value when it's used in a good way. And the thing that I appreciate is when people sort of know me or understand my life and they see in me and what I'm doing, and that inspires them to be different in their life, however they act, whatever's going on with them. That kind of inspiration I love and I think is great. The inspiration that I don't love is the like one where I'm at the grocery store and I get a random person saying, "Oh my gosh, you're so inspiring." And it's like, you have no idea who I am and you don't know anything that I've done. And why do you think that me at the grocery store should be any different than anybody else at the grocery store? And so I think the difference is an understanding of who I am and what I've done. And if that creates inspiration, that's great. But not the inspiration that comes just from because I exist and I'm in a wheelchair, then I'm inspiring, if that distinction makes sense.
It does. And I want to pivot to your professional work. You're a pediatric nurse practitioner. I gather you're taking a little break right now as you have two little ones in the house. I want to talk about how there's great anxiety right now about healthcare, the affordability of healthcare. And I wonder if you could just talk about how you've seen that in that work, but also how the cutbacks that we're seeing and hearing about are affecting people with disabilities in particular.
Well, so I worked for 10 years as a pediatric nurse practitioner. I worked in primary care, first in Maine and then here in Vermont for a number of years, and I loved that work. I love taking care of patients. I love being able to work with families. I still love it and I hope to go back to it someday. But as you said, life just got a little bit too crazy between the growth of the Kelly Brush Foundation and my two kids both being in school and their schedules being busier than ever. But I think seeing the working in healthcare, you see it from both sides, right? And you see the constraints on the healthcare system and just seeing more patients in a day is not any easier on me or any of the other providers, but also patients need to get in and families need help and support and reimbursement rates and all sorts of different things are causing such a snowball effect. I mean, I wish I had a great answer on it. But I think the thing that I saw was that, or the thing that I felt was that every patient that I was with, I loved that interaction and that visit. And I thought that was the part of it that I loved. It was all the outside stuff that makes it really hard. And I think that that's a challenge in healthcare, is that I think a lot of healthcare workers really love the work they do, but it's all of the outside stuff that makes it harder. And that is not something I'm gonna be able to solve. But that's policy work, right? And that's health insurance, and that's all sorts of things that are really hard, difficult topics, and I don't have answers for those. But all I know is in those moments, like supporting healthcare workers in the work that they're doing, I think is really important. And then in terms of people with disabilities, we disproportionately use the healthcare system. And I mean, I found that out recently when I had to have this surgery. And unfortunately, I had like not a great experience and ended up not that it wasn't a great experience, but like I wanted to go see my primary care and I couldn't get in for 2 weeks. And so I had to use the emergency room. It wasn't really an emergency, but in order to get the care I needed, that's where I had to go. And then it turned out I needed surgery the next week, right? So like I did, but this was how our healthcare system worked, and it's just not set up well. And so then not only do people with disabilities have greater healthcare needs, when the healthcare system isn't set up well, we are then paying more for those greater needs also. And I see it time and again with complications that come from, spinal cord injuries or whatever disability it is. And, people, some are going to be good advocates for themselves and some are not. And some are going to be able to navigate that system really well and some are going to struggle more. And that is a really sad reality of who gets better care versus who doesn't, and who has better outcomes versus who doesn't. And that's just an unfortunate way that our system is set up right now.
As somebody who's, really intimately connected with many people who are recovering from very serious accidents, what are your biggest concerns right now in terms of how they're going to be treated in a healthcare system that's under enormous strain?
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest concerns is the reduced time in rehab right after an accident. So when I got hurt, I was in the hospital for about 3 months after my accident. And that was 2 weeks in the original hospital and then 2.5 months in rehab, where I learned how to take care of my body. I learned how to live in a wheelchair. I learned how to do your basic things like get dressed, get in and out of my chair, go to the bathroom, take a shower, cook a meal, things that you wouldn't think about, but that you have to relearn and figure out how to do differently. Now, rehab is 4 to 6 weeks for most people. And that is not enough time to actually figure out how to live your life. And so then you end up getting home and you don't have good technique on how to take care of your body. You don't know how to do it necessarily in a clean and safe way. And so then you are gr at greater risk for infection, or you are greater risk for different complications. Not to mention greater risk for not knowing what's out there and what's possible, knowing that you can, drive a car. I was able to learn how to drive a car when I was in rehab. Nobody does that now. Learning that you can work, like all these things that you can do, what are the different adaptations that you need to be able to work, that those things are possible. So this limited time in rehab is because insurances won't pay for it. And then that sets you up for less success going forward for your whole life. I think that's one of our greatest challenges right now for people with disabilities.
Since you worked as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I'm wondering how you reflect on what is going on now with vaccine hesitancy, the increase in it, what it means for people who are vulnerable to have people who are not immunized, perhaps in their school classes, and whether it's something you have encountered and what you say to people who are skeptical or hesitant about the routine vaccines.
I mean, we've had vaccine hesitancy since I've been in practice, but it's certainly increased post-COVID. And I practiced, I haven't practiced for the last couple of years, so I'm not in it right now. But for, a few years after COVID, I definitely was in that. And I think we're lucky in Vermont that generally we have a pretty good acceptance of vaccines. My message always to people who have the hesitancy, well, the conversation is going to go different depending on the person, and I can very often read the room a little bit there. So it very much depends that way. But what I mean, one of the biggest things, and I can say this because I'm there sitting in my wheelchair, right, is that we are not just protecting the child. Right. And we know that they're, the concerns that people have are very valid, not that they necessarily are based in any facts that are widely accepted, but we understand that the greatest concern is for that child. We also need to think about the greater population and that we're not just protecting that child, we're protecting the other kids in that class, and we're protecting the family members that are at home. And for somebody who has a new spinal cord injury, being exposed to something like pneumonia can be a really, really big deal. And that's the kind of thing that I think a lot of people don't understand and at least don't feel like is their responsibility as much. And the more that we can take that on and have a greater understanding of a global responsibility to keep our population safe, I think the more the hopefully that will go a longer way in people accepting and taking vaccines.
Well, speaking of community, in September, the 21st Kelly Brush Ride will be taking place. I think it's something like over 1,000 some riders will be cycling in Vermont. It's a century ride as well as some shorter distances. You've also got it going in Park City in the Bay Area now. For people who don't know, but perhaps have heard about it or seen the cyclists go by, what is it, and what is it raising money and awareness for?
Yeah, I know 21 years of the Kelly Brush Ride is wild and so cool. And you're right, it's over 1,000 riders at this point. So it's September 12th this year. It started as a century ride when the very first year, 6 months after my accident, my ski teammates wanted to raise money for me to help me buy a mono ski so I could get back on the hill with them again. And that year, it was 20 of them, and they raised $60,000. And every year since then, we've been raising money for the Kelly Brush Foundation to help other people with disabilities get out and be active in whatever way that they want to be. And so that's what we do. I mean, that's our mission at the Kelly Brush Foundation, and we're giving grants. So I talked about some equipment earlier. We give almost $1 million in grants each year to help people across the country purchase adaptive sports equipment. We're raising money to bring people together so they can learn about adaptive sports. And this is all done at the ride, and the ride, is an incredible community of people. We usually have about 40 or 50 adaptive riders there too, so you can see the bikes that they're on, be part of that community, and it's just a really fun way to get together to support anybody who wants to get out and be active, and do that with a bike ride. We do, yeah, as you said, it started. It's a century ride. That's how it started, but we also have 10, 20, 50-mile rides, as well as a 30, those are all road rides, as well as a 30-mile gravel ride. So there's lots of different options. There's fun things down there, like a face painter and ice cream and different things to make it great for the family. So my kids are 7 and 10 and love to go down and enjoy the day in the community. And they actually rode 10 miles for the first time last year, which was really fun. So it's a great day. It's really fun. Yeah, I think a lot of people have heard about it here in Vermont. If you haven't actually come and done it, come check it out. It's great. We always have a great time. And yeah, as you mentioned, in the Bay Area, we do on October 24th this year. We get a group of people together in Mill Valley, and there's a mountain bike as well as road rides. So you can do either one. And the Park City ride we just had a couple weeks ago, which was really fun. So. And people can do it anywhere. We have this was, the beauty of COVID, right? Born out of COVID, we have a remote ride. So if you can't be there on that day, you can do a ride and do it wherever you want, whether it's a bike ride or a hike or a swim or a, paddleboard, whatever it is, to get out and be active and support the mission that we're doing. So
Will you be riding this year?
that is very up in the air. Because of my back surgery, unfortunately. As far as I know, I'm on restrictions for about 3 months, so I won't be out of that. But it's possible that I can be on my mountain bike, and the mountain bike has an e-assist and I can throttle, so I might just throttle the whole time and not actually bike and do that with my kids. But I have an appointment with my surgeon next week, so we'll see what he thinks about that. But I hope so. I will be there, for sure. I'll be there. It would be the first year that I hadn't, I don't ride, which would be a huge bummer, but that's life and would be okay. And I would certainly be riding again next year. So,
Well, finally, Kelly, at this 20-year mark of your accident, many people have told your story in a variety of ways. I'm wondering how what you would like people to take away from the Kelly Brush story.
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, I think I would go back to a little bit of what I said before about choice, and that everybody's going to have things that come up in their life, big and small, and you have a choice on how you react to it. And what I would like people to take away from my story is that not to feel bad for me, but to be excited about the fact that I've been able to live such a full life and continue to have all the same highs and lows that so many people have. And I do it from my wheelchair, and that's okay. And so I have some more struggles, definitely, than others. And my life is awesome and really fun. And I hope people can see that and see, the beauty in life no matter what comes up and what happens, and find and follow that.
Well, Kelly Rush, I want to thank you for joining us and sharing that story on the Vermont Conversation.
Well, thank you again for having me. It's been great.
Kelly Brush is the founder and spokesperson for the Kelly Brush Foundation, which helps people with spinal cord injuries maintain an active lifestyle. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks so much for listening.